Watch Matt Bowen. Bowen's a tough guy.
Matt Bowen.
And it's intercepted by Matt Bowen.
Miller, ton of time. But the coverage is good with Matt Bowen.
7-year NFL veteran.
Blitz coming from Bowen, and he knocks it out. The Redskins fall on top of it. Matt Bowen's been the guy applying all the pressure.
Coach for IC Catholic football.
He's a really eloquent meathead.
Yeah, I actually am. I'm okay with it. If Anthony said it, I'm always good with Anthony. Don't worry about that.
NFL writer and analyst for ESPN.
We were thinking about calling you earlier in the week, Matt.
Let's be honest. We always think about calling Matt.
Well, there's no reason not to, especially when you're thinking about talking football. But when you look at the two top tight ends in this draft.
Colston Loveland, to me, is, you know, a matchup player in the pass game. When you use 12 personnel and it looks like 11 personnel. Looks like three wide receivers in the field. He can press the seams, can run the deep overs, the deep crossers, easy ability to separate from linebackers and coverage. At Michigan, they threw a wide receiver screen, so that would give Ben Johnson a much deeper game plan if you have someone like Colston Loveland in terms of creating matchups in the pass game.
Now, which one would complement Cole Kmet more?
I would probably say Loveland.
The Chicago Bears select Colston Loveland, tight end, Michigan.
Matt Bowen.
I have a simple rule with beer. I only drink beer that you can buy in 30 packs. So that, I'll leave you with that.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
You know it's football season when Matt Bowen is around, and we are glad that we get the opportunity to talk with him once a week about the game that we love. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Matt, thanks for joining us. How are things?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're good, man. Congrats on getting to week one of the NFL season. But you're already knee-deep in the football. Like, what's the practice schedule in your life these days, Matt?
Well, we start practice about 25 minutes. I'm sitting in my car outside the field right now, so that's my plan. I pick the boys up at 3. One of my boys up at 3. Get him home. Get my other boy home. Then grab my son, Grant. We come to practice, and I sit in the parking lot, talk to you guys, and I'll be on the field pretty soon.
Let's go!
Good. Now you know it is football season.
Yeah,
and,
it is.
And we're excited. You know, the season starts in 2 days. The Bears, they'll wait until Monday night to play. But looking at them and looking at what happened here, we now know that Braxton Jones will be the left tackle. And it doesn't feel like, Matt, that he won the job. It just felt like he might have been the best choice. So how can he prove that he won the job? And what will they do to help bolster him if he's still not 100% and maybe not the best choice?
Right. Well, I was writing an evaluation on Braxton Jones. Well, to be perfectly honest, in my final grade, they would say league average starter, and that's what he is. You know, and it's interesting because you look at Ben Johnson, the offensive line he had in Detroit, and what they did to upgrade this offensive line. Tooney, Jonas Jackson. You look at what they have in Darnell Wright in the right side of the offensive line. Physical guys at the point of attack. Braxton Jones is not that. He's more athletic, great foot speed, the quickness, the motor, mirror, and pass protection, but he's not an overly physical player at the point of attack. So if I'm looking for him to improve, show me more at the point of attack. Show me more the ability to drive defenders off the ball in the run game. And if he struggles, especially in pass protection, you're going to have to chip. You're going to have to help him and close down that left side. Because what you want ultimately in this football game is what you saw in that one series from Caleb Williams and the Bears offense versus the Bills. I know it's preseason. I know it doesn't count. And preseason games to me are an extension of practice. But you saw in that drive, what did they do? They threw on rhythm. They threw a timing. Caleb Williams threw the ball with location, and all of a sudden the offense starts to go. Everything looks efficient. Everything is moving. That's how you score points. That's how you get first downs.
Matt, can Ben Johnson do what he wants in the run game with the kind of left tackle that Braxton Jones is? Because I'm most excited to watch Ben run the ball, frankly.
Right. Yes, he can, especially if you're an outside zone or a wide zone, however you'd want to define it, which I think would be the core run game for the Bears this year. Now, they'll still run gap or power. We understand that. You saw that in Detroit. But outside zone, yes. Can you reach block? Can Braxton climb to the second level and cut off linebackers in space? Sure, he can do that. There's no question he can do that. I think if you're looking at what he can do in the run game, especially to the backside, it's not an issue at all for the Bears. And to the front side, can he reach? Can he get his helmet play side? Can he drive someone and move them laterally and create daylight for DeAndre Swift to get a field? Yes, he can do those things. So I don't think it's that much of an issue, speeds in the run game. For me, it's more in pass protection. Can he win consistently in pass protection on the left side?
Can they protect Caleb by making sure that he gets the ball out on time? Like, can he play a role in his own protection with, hey, top of the drop, the ball comes out?
Yes. And eliminate the wasted movement he had last year. Too often you'd see for Caleb Williams, he'd retreat in the pocket or look for an escape door. Can't play like that, right? Now, there's times. We all understand there's times when you have to be a second reaction player, and that's what Caleb gives you. Those are the natural traits he has, the natural talent to play outside of structure, but only when necessary. You want him to throw on time, especially against this team. Brian Flores, that Minnesota defense, led the NFL in blitz rate last year, 38.4%. They're going to bring a lot of players. They're going to blitz. They're going to disguise covers. They're going to disguise their fronts. So you have to get the ball out on time and understand where it's supposed to go. When I tell my quarterbacks here at IC, there's a throw to be made in every play. We just have to find it, right? Same thing you tell a pro quarterback. You have to find where your outlet is, where your hot is versus pressure this week, where the matchup is where you can get it out in a three-step drop, because you're going to have to play on time because there's going to be consistent pressure on Monday night from that defense.
Matt, I was watching a film breakdown of Brian Flores' defense against Ben Johnson's offense and how Ben has been able to run the ball against him with great success. Because he creates space with personnel and alignment and shifting. Mm-hmm. And I got so excited about it, because he'll bunch up, whether it's the two tight ends and a wide out, you know, on one side or whatever, and then he'll send one in motion. But he creates a lot of space between the D end and the D tackle, creates these gaps, and then takes advantage of it. I don't know if Bears fans are ready to watch this offense with someone who understands run game schematics the way that Ben does. I'm excited about it.
I agree, Spiegs, and to your point, it's creating numbers, right? Where do we get a numbers advantage? In the run game, if you run with reduced sets and you have a tight bunch to that side of the field or a wing set, now you're asking the defensive end, what are you going to do? Are you going to line up wide? Well, now there's a gap there. Are you going to line up tight? Well, now we have numbers in the perimeter to go outside and get defensive backs. So it's all about creating edges in the run game. And you do that by numbers and formation and alignment and motion, right? There's so many ways you can get to that, and that's what Ben Johnson is great at. He's not showing the same thing consistently, but getting to the thing he wants based on those factors. And then you will see that on Monday night.
So do the Bears have a running back who's good enough to take advantage of that?
It's interesting you asked that question, because I was talking with someone today about Swift and how there's not much hype around him at all, right? If you talk about this Bears offense and the upgrades they had, the offensive line, obviously Ben Johnson, what they have at receiver, adding Luther Burden, Colson Loveland, you don't hear DeAndre Swift very often in terms of what he's going to be in this offense. But someone that can work the balls to the perimeter, has speed in the perimeter, has pass-catching traits, you would say, well, that fits this offense, right? Because it does. It does fit this offense. And with an improved offensive line, improved play calling, and improved setup, he's someone who should be very productive for this offense. I'm not saying he's a 1,500-yard rusher. This is someone that can get you 1,200 total yards in this offense.
I feel like even in the run game, with the wide zone concepts that were run in Detroit, I feel like Swift is actually, looking at the roster, the perfect guy to run some of that, because it goes with his style. The idea of, I'm going to drift a little bit, and I'm going to see where the hole is, where the cutback lane is. I think that he could have a really strong year with this particular offensive set.
Yeah, he is. I agree, Lawrence. He is a fit for the scheme. Because of zone runner, what do they have? They have patience, they have vision, and they have short area speed. That's the most important thing. Do I press the ball to the edge, or do I bend the ball back inside? And you do that based off the movement of the offensive line, the flow of the linebackers, where you can find daylight. And that short area speed is so critical, because those running lanes shrink very quickly on Sundays. Okay, so you have to be able to get through to the second level immediately, and Swift can do that. And I'm excited to see how they utilize him in the pass game. You know, and I hate, you know, coming down on former coaches, but the Bears coaching staff last year, you wanted to see more with the running backs in the pass game. You really did. I think you will this year.
Well, and you mentioned the coaches. Eric Bieniemy talking about DeAndre Swift and what he's going to ask of him and demand of him made me a little more optimistic about it. You know, so Bieniemy can drive somebody and get the most out of him, can he, Matt?
Yeah, you used the word demand there. I like that, because that's good coaching. Okay, here's the thing about coaching. And we've said this before, but it's trust and respect, right? from a player perspective. If you trust and respect your coach, he can be demanding. He can hold you accountable. He can coach you extremely hard. You talk to anyone about Eric Bieniemy. A lot of new coaches on the staff, that's what they do. I'm not saying that guarantees a playoff spot. No one's saying that or a division title. But what it does guarantee is a better brand of football, more accountability, more discipline in the field, more awareness in terms of critical game situations, backed up third down, two-minute red zone. You expect this football team to be better in those situations because of the coaching they have.
When it comes to looking at, and we're talking with Matt Bowen, by the way, enjoying a little Bears conversation with him. When you start thinking about not just Monday night, but what the Bears offense could look like, what excites you about it?
I think the number one thing is efficiency, being efficient, putting drives together, being able to create explosive plays when you have to. And most importantly, scoring points, right? Scoring points. Being a team that can score points consistently week to week and create conflict for opposing defenses. Because you have the pieces there. Now, obviously, Caleb Williams has to take a step. We all understand that. But we're expecting him to do that with coaching. I think you saw enough flashes last year. Say, you get this young player with the right coaching, the right players around him, he can be a really high-level player in this league. But to me, it's the scoring points, the creating explosive plays. Because from a defensive perspective, what are the two things you want to do every week? You want to take away the deep ball and you want to hit the quarterback. Okay, well, the Bears have tried to improve that with the offensive line, plus the play calling of Ben Johnson. And they have explosive playmakers in that offense. They do. Now they just need to execute it and go out and do it.
Matt, have you ever had somebody who was a captain on one of your teams and then and then suddenly was not a captain on one of your teams? The Bears have a situation where now there's five captains as voted on by the players, but there were eight last year. There's four guys. I think it's Cole Kmet and DJ Moore.
And Jalen Johnson.
And Jalen Johnson. And there's...
And TJ Edwards
And Tremaine Edmonds.
And Tremaine Edmonds.
So there's five. There's five guys who were captains last year and are not this year. Does that take any doing in the locker room as a coach to try and make that right?
No, I don't think so, because as a player, you understand this is a major transition to start a new coaching staff. You start over. There's no carryover for last year. Every one of those players had to earn a spot again this year, had to be evaluated differently. And I've been through that, a coaching change in the league. It's hard. And there was a lot of turnover. New players brought in via free agency in the draft. You understand, even if you're a veteran player who was a captain before, you haven't earned that right. You have to re-earn that right. First of all, having that many captains, to me, I've never heard of something like that. To me, that's 13-year football to me. I mean, it's too many, in my opinion. There's too many voices. You should have a limited number of captains, in my opinion, at any level of the field, because those are the guys that run the football team. Those are the guys that have the relationship with the coach that can deliver messages from the locker room to the front office, to the coaching staff. So if I was a captain last year and Ben Johnson came in and I wasn't a captain, you know what I'd say? I didn't earn it, Speaks. I just didn't earn it, and that's okay.
Man, is it Tennessee now that has, what, seven captains or eight captains, and one of them is the rookie quarterback again? It's like we've seen this movie before. It can't work sometimes.
Right. Yeah, how do you bring all those guys out for the coin toss? There's not a room.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. We've spent a lot of time talking about Brian Flores versus Caleb Williams. I'm also excited about Dennis Allen versus J.J. McCarthy. Well, what things do you think we know about adding the personnel to what Dennis Allen's scheme is?
That's a great point, Lawrence. And I was going to think about this today when I was, you know, talking about the show. Is this game is really about the defense coordinators, right? We expect it to be about the quarterbacks, you understand, but it's really about the defensive coordinators versus the quarterbacks. And with Dennis Allen, you're going to get J.J. McCarthy, who's never played in a real National Football League game. He has not. So he didn't get those developmental reps last season. He hasn't seen live game action yet. He has not. You can take advantage of that if you're Dennis Allen. You can disguise looks. You can change the picture post-snap. If you go back to what he did, especially when he was in D.C. and run the show in New Orleans, was so many loaded, I call them loaded fronts, where you're going to occupy defenders and using defenders to occupy offensive linemen and protection. And what you can do is you can walk up a linebacker, looks like a five-man front, and what you're telling the offense is you have to block this guy. But then you're going to twist, you're going to stunt, you're going to bring a safety off an edge. You're going to find a way to manipulate pass protection and bring pressure. And while you're doing that, everything's going to change in the secondary. Safeties are going to rotate. It's going to look like man, it's going to go to zone or vice versa. You're going to bring zone pressure, man pressure. A lot of different things you can do to a young quarterback with a veteran defensive coordinator. The defense, to me, based on what they did this offseason, has talented impact players at all three levels of the field.
About an hour ago, it was reported that Isaiah Foskey, the defensive end, former New Orleans Saint, a second-round pick in 2023, cut by as part of their roster cuts last week, is here and has been working out for the Bears. So another edge rusher with some Dennis Allen familiarity possibly coming in. Matt, your thoughts?
It happens a lot. I mean, I'll be honest. My last year in the league, I wasn't very good at the point. And I signed with the Buffalo Bills because my DB coach from Washington went there. There's familiarity. You know, and that's what you do, especially at this point in the point of the summer, is if there's someone coming to work out, you have an open spot open, you're going to try to sign someone that you've worked with before because you know how their habits in terms of how they like to be coached, what positions they fit at, how they work in your defense. There's not a lot of guesswork there. So when you're doing this late in the summer, you were doing this for a specific reason, somebody you've coached before and someone that you know has a certain role or a certain fit in your defense.
Matt, we appreciate the time. We know you got to get onto the practice field, so go do that, Coach. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Matt Bone. It's going to be great fun to talk to him all year. Isaiah Foskey had just 149 snaps on defense in the two seasons with the Saints, according to Pro Football Focus.
And Dino in the chat asked a really good question. Did Matt coach against J.J. McCarthy? That would make sense. I think those timelines actually add up.
Oh,
when JJ was at Nazareth, because that's like a blood rivalry for IC Catholic, Nazareth and IC Catholic. And then, but it might not have been because that senior season, JJ went to IMG Academy. So I'll text Matt and find out, but it's a really good question by Dino.
So you got Isaiah Foskey here working out. There's still just three healthy active running backs on this roster, right?
We don't know that the other two are actually healthy.
So there's still just one healthy active running back.
That is the one thing that you missed last week, Speak.
Yeah, just Swift and then Menungai and Roshan, we were talking about. They both made the team. Oh, my God, you owe me a steak.
I do not owe you a steak yet because we said...
After the first game?
After the Tuesday after week one.
I forgot.
Week two. So that's when we will talk about this. But what you missed out on is everyone that we had who had been up at Hallis Hall telling the story of, you know how they do the positional drills?
Yeah.
And this was after cutdown day. The only person doing the positional drills was DeAndre Swift. and I guess Rome went over there to do like a little bit of stuff. But it was just like they were looking at the running back group. And the running back group was DeAndre Swift.
Man. He's I got a fantasy draft tomorrow night. Very excited. Just in one league this year, I turned down the opportunity for a second league. But everybody who's in my one league, they're not listeners. I gotta get DeAndre Swift, right? Like somewhere I don't know what round he's projected in, but it seems like somebody we should be leaning on.
I can't have you draft DeAndre Swift.
Why? You're afraid what that would do to the show?
Well, here's the thing. You have been...
It's content. It'll be phenomenal show content.
You've been killing this guy.
Well, especially last year.
For the last year. And if he ends up on your team...
Things change.
And
seasons change.
And things don't go well. It will then become personal because then he's costing you games your fantasy league.
No,
you can't
Lawrence,
have it.
This is the kind of internal conflict that makes sports radio great. You know, it's like, absolutely. It's like, you know, I used to work with a guy who had to gamble on basketball so he'd watch the game.
That's right, Chicago.
You nailed it.
Every job has its toilets.
I love betting the under. Oh, look, there's a travel. Yeah. All right. These are all true stories. But, you know, it's like Pete Rose. If I'm rooting for a player
still
on the
gambling.
Bears. It can't hurt us in terms of content. You know, Rob Manfred will pardon me if I do anything that's...
Did you just compare yourself to the guy that got lifetime ban from Major League Baseball?
He's back, Alex.
And Alex knows a thing or two about lifetime bans.
That's true. Oh, we're talking to the once and now disgraced former host of Categories. It's been a while.
Exactly. I'm speaking from personal experience.
Yeah, I did compare myself to Pete Rose. That's right. Matty Hustle over here.
don't know, the Swift thing, I don't know. If you guys watched that, Pete Bursich, the Vikings radio analyst, did a great breakdown of Ben Johnson's offense. But, like, if you guys watched it, you noticed the running theme. Here's what Jahmyr Gibbs did so well against them last year.
That's
now,
true.
Now, can DeAndre Swift do this? We'll have to wait and see. And every time he asks that question, I'm like, no, probably not.
Tanny, you sent it in the chat, and that's what I was referencing in the conversation with Bowen, is exactly that. Like, oh, boy, they have somebody who's good enough? But Bowen leapt at it. He said DeAndre Swift is actually a good fit.
You watch the tape and you think about what it is that they want to do.
Yeah, but you can't.
But I mean specifically in the run game. The stuff that Gibbs is able to do in the pass game, and the fact that, you know, if he gets the ball in his hands, that it's a wrap.
So are you against me drafting any Bears player?
No, specifically DeAndre Swift.
Well, you know, now I have to take
because of how,
I mean,
how much you have just despised him as a player.
Oh, despised is strong.
You called him weak last year. You called him indecisive.
Just trying to coach him up.
Well, look, as with any other life advice, should we defer to Nico? Ask what Nico thinks about your draft scenario?
Yes, we should.
What do you think, Nico? Should Speaks draft DeAndre Swift?
No Bears.
Oh.
See, we were able to turn that around with the quickness.
If you miss Nico Horner, you should use the Odyssey app and the rewind function. But he said no Bears on his fantasy team, and that gave
no Bears.
That gave Danny.
The Texans are saying no to this too.
What?
I don't like it.
They don't like me. They don't like me having Swift.
No.
Why?
The level of bias and vitriol is going to come from you if it doesn't work out.
I'm entitled.
I don't like it.
I'm entitled to change my mind, and this would be me buying low on DeAndre Swift with inside information. I'm like the Mike Milliken of fantasy football drafts. Is that the right reference? See the guy? Is it Mike Mularkey? That's an offensive coordinator. Is it
Are you talking about a former Illinois Speaker of the House?
That's Mike Madigan.
Yeah, okay.
He's only doing
you're going to get there eventually.
Alliterative names.
Are you talking about Greg Maddox's brother?
Mike Maddox?
No.
In stereo.
No, Michael Milliken, I think, was the insider trading guy. I mean, it's probably better to go with Martha Stewart as an insider trading reference point.
It's not alliterative, though.
That's the thing. It's not as much fun to say.
Yeah, you did like superhero names.
And it's not Mike Mamula, who is the archetype for the draft combine disaster.
Well, why don't we talk about Craig Counsell?
Ooh, that's alliterative.
And the choices that he's made with today's lineup, something that you brought up earlier today.
Yeah, he's got some stuff to fix, and he got a little window into something that I think he's going to do an awful lot this coming month.
I say no. And no to Matt Miller, too. Back after this on The Score.
No Bears.
Here's the pitch to Carson. A swing and a line drive down the left field line. Fair ball. Cubs win the game. Carson Kelly delivers. Cubs are mobbing in between first and second base. Listen to this crowd.
The crowd yesterday at Wrigley, Lawrence Holmes, was electric. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer referred to it several times during the game as like one of those days where you could feel the crowd kind of willing the team towards victory. And they came back from down 6-1 and ended up tying the game with the two-run homer from Carson Kelly, and then he walked it off in the 11th. Big, big win for them yesterday. And Nico Horner talked about what a big win it felt like earlier in the show with us.
And I'm glad that he doesn't try to act too cool about stuff like that, where it's like, yeah, the energy that fans were feeling, I was feeling that energy too. It's cool. The Cubs have a lineup out for tonight. Would you like to hear it?
I would.
Nico Horner will lead off.
Against the lefty for the Braves.
Yeah, and he's had such a great season, man. I'm so happy for Nico. He's a 5-WAR player.
It's pretty amazing when you don't homer.
It is. It lets you know all the other things that he does. So Nico will lead off and play second. Tucker will bat second and play right. Suzuki is your DH. He will bat third. Carson Kelly is behind the plate. He'll bat fourth. Justin Turner in the lineup tonight.
That's interesting because Carlos Santana, historically an OPS over 800 against lefties and a very long career as a switch hitter, and he got a pinch hit or a pinch hit appearance yesterday. It's Santana versus Turner for playing time in a lot of ways.
Ian Happ will play left and bat six. Dansby Swanson at short. Matt Shaw at third. And Mr. Alcantara is in center field and batting ninth.
The Jaguar, Kevin Alcantara, will play center field against lefties. I don't know if Pete Crow Armstrong is going to get a ton of starts against lefties. He's been brutal against lefties. And if Alcantara looks good, he could get some goes. The thing about Pete is, as he's been struggling, they haven't been able to sit him down because you don't want anybody else out there defensively. Alcantara you can survive with out there defensively, as opposed to, you know, Seiya, who really has been the backup center fielder. Now, Alcantara can be here, and he has murdered lefties in the minors this year. I believe it's a 998 OPS against lefties for Kevin Alcantara. So I'll be interested, among other things, this month to see how often Craig Counsell does that.
Navigating all of this stuff is going to be interesting for Counts. That one, they made what I think a lot of people were like, that's an interesting roster move. Two, you might have some redundancy now with Santana and Turner.
Yeah, Santana said that several teams wanted him, but Council's the only manager that called him. And Council had him in Milwaukee a couple years ago and said, he said to Carlos Santana, I need you here. So Santana came here.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too, but it's interesting. It tells you, you know, how much Council thinks about him and thinks of him. And everything's fine for September when you can expand the rosters and keep a guy like that around. But come playoff roster time, I can't imagine both him and Justin Turner on a playoff roster myself.
It's like, what experience do you, I guess it truly matters what the other team is sending out there. If you're going up against a team that is going to throw two lefties, like, do you look ahead and go, all right, we want Turner because he's used to playoff pressure and we're going to use him against lefties?
Well, and this is what's interesting. Santana's played 30 playoff games
right
in his career. So he's been out there before. He's a much better defensive first baseman than Justin Turner. So that might end up being the clincher for that. But we're 30 days away from that possibility.
It's crazy.
Is Daniel Palencia the closer when you get to the playoffs? You feel 100% sure of
that?
What
other choice do you have?
Brad Keller.
Keller worked himself into and then out of some trouble yesterday.
Yeah, and he's had some moments of doing that, but he's been great. He's had an absolutely great year. The other day they went Kittredge, Keller, and Palencia in Colorado, and they had three perfect innings, the three of them. So maybe that ideally is how they want to go with the lefties filling in if need be.
Well, let me go back to something here. And let me ask you this. What's happened to Palencia that you don't like?
Palencia has had some difficulties numbers-wise. Just looking at the stats, after allowing only 6 earned runs in his first 38 outings of the year, he gave up 5 earned runs in a 9-game stretch. But it's not just the numbers. He's had trouble spotting the fastball sometimes. But he that slider, I've always been worried about that slider because it doesn't do a lot. It doesn't bend a lot. It changes eye level. It changes timing. But he's gotten away with a couple cement mixers right over the heart of the plate with that thing. So I worry about him.
I hate to do this off of vibes and feels, but doesn't Palencia feel like the closer of this team?
I mean, he has.
Doesn't he feel like the guy that you want to give the ball to in the ninth inning of a playoff game?
Not lately to me. Lately, it's been sketchy. Lately, it has felt sketchy and it has looked a little bit sketchy, even when he has survived and gotten through. But, you know, he's, as Council told us a long time ago, he's a young pitcher taking a very important step forward. And they'd gotten him confident, and they've gotten him comfortable. But they have to do that a few times. It's not like you just graduate. You just grow and develop and graduate. They have to help him from a vibes perspective, from a comfort perspective sometimes. Sometimes he looks a little rattled out there.
Yeah, but I think that growing a closer is hard. But I do think that these are some of the things that a closer has to go through to get to where you eventually want them. I still look at a guy that can have overpowering stuff with his four-seamer. And I say, okay, go get me the guy that can throw 102 if I need it out of the bullpen. And I agree with you about the slider and that it sometimes doesn't slide.
Yeah.
Shout out to Dylan Cease.
Exactly.
it sometimes doesn't do its job. But I would have a hard time turning my back on him at this point in the season and then being like to Keller, all right, you're up. You're going to be our guy now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Counts is really good at this type of stuff.
Yeah, he's got a month to figure it out. And he's got – Javier Assad has been really good since he's come back, especially the last couple of starts. And that's a useful arm that can be in your bullpen, not as a closer, but as a bulk guy, or can be used at different times. Basically what I'm saying is there's a puzzle that he's got to figure out. And now he's got Assad as a piece of it. I had dreamed of Ben Brown as a late-inning option. I don't think that guy is...
Texter, there are two really good back-to-back texts, 1708, 1815. It's a shame Ben Brown isn't more reliable. Yep. He should be a late-inning weapon. We agree with you.
Yes.
And 815, Texter, you're right, too. A 4A guy who throws over 100, Palencia does get squared up. But I think that has more to do with what Spiegs is talking about, where guys are sitting on that fastball because they're like, oh, okay, this slider here, I can let that go by, or I can try to tank that one. But I know that he's got 102, so I'm gearing up for 102.
And they're sitting on that because they don't have to respect the swing and miss nature of the slider. Even with a guy like Kittredge, who doesn't throw that hard, that slider is seriously swing and miss. You got to respect it.
And the fastball doesn't always move the way that you want.
Yeah.
This is the stuff that we would talk about with Kopech all the time. You can throw 100, but guys can get their bat speed up to 100 if there isn't some movement to it. If there isn't some late action on it, guys can get to it.
I think you're right that making a change in terms of closer is unlikely, but there's no doubt that the guy who's the most trustworthy in that pen is Brad Keller. To me, that's number one in your circle of trust. So maybe, as a texter suggests, he gets the most challenging part of the lineup every time, whether it's 7, 8, or 9. He's the guy you use to target the best hitters.
It's not a bad thing for us to – we'll have Craig like next week, right? Because we had him last week.
Yeah.
To kind of talk philosophy with him about – high leverage versus this guy's my closer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of where he falls on the spectrum of this.
I'd always thought that he was on the more creative side of it, and I think he still probably is. But, you know, a lot of managers like to know what they've got and just go 7, 8, and 9.
Let's talk a little college football.
Dude, you're so excited. You're so ready. And really all you guys, you and Tanny and Alex.
Yeah.
Touched by the college football angel with all these island games over the weekend.
I mean, Tanny and I were pretty much touched by the football devil this weekend. My team and his adopted team and his real team all touched by the devil this weekend. Not good.
Be wary.
Yeah, and we should probably talk about what went down in Chapel Hill last night, too. Shout out to Anderson Pack. Am I wrong to assume that Michael Jordan loves North Carolina more than he loves Chicago?
Oh, book that. Run with that. That is fact.
Is it wrong that I kind of felt stabbed in the heart a little bit last night? And then I had even more joy watching North Carolina get their asses kicked? We'll talk about all of that and more next here on The Score.
And in my opinion, the way that first half went, it's a big drive for the North Carolina defense.
That was the Capital One rewarding performance, and this is a rewarding run as Gavorian Barnes is out the gate, inside the 30, to the 10, touchdown TCU, 75 yards and no flags.
As I finished a sentence about how big of a drive this is for the North Carolina defense, Kendall Briles and company said it's a pretty big drive for us. We got a shot here.
You know, we played competitively, but then just couldn't sustain it. So, obviously, we have a lot of work to do. You know, we need to do a better job all the way around, coaching, playing, all three phases of the game. Just wasn't up to what it needs to be, and I know we're a lot better than that. So.
Yeah, it was not good last night there in Chapel Hill after that first series.
It was good at first, just for a moment.
You'd have thought they won the Super Bowl. And Sonny Dykes is over there like, y'all getting hyped over this, huh? All right, great. Let's turn them over. Let's run the ball for 250 yards, whatever it is they ran for last night, and demolish them.
So Bill is trying to kind of do what Deion has done at Colorado in some, like, use his personality and his presence to
build a thing. I don't know if it's his personality.
Well, that's the problem.
But his connection.
His connection.
And Carolina was like every piece of Carolina royalty, and they do have a great tradition of incredible players, of Hall of Fame players that have come out of there.
Lawrence Taylor.
Julius Peppers.
Sure.
And both of those guys are there. Michael Jordan's there. Like, they panned to Michael Jordan. I was like, for real?
MJ, on the other hand, and dadgum old Roy fired up about the heel start.
Last time Michael Jordan was at a game at the United Center was a Blackhawks game in April of 2012.
I'm just sitting there like, you can't come home?
No, he can't.
Like, ever?
He can.
But you can go to a I almost said a word, a crappy Carolina football game?
Yeah. Well,
is he going to be here when Derrick Rose gets his jersey retired?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no on that. I'm sorry, man.
It was hard. Like, it was really heartbreaking. Because I'm like, you were about to sit. Well, I know you're not going to sit for all 3 hours of that trash. You're going to sit for at least an hour of trash.
Friend of the show, Jack Silverstein, Reed Jack, wrote about MJ not going to Bulls games and included a quote from 1999 from Michael. I don't come around Jerry. I don't have to come around Jerry. I can come around and see some of the players. I don't have to report to him or any of the Jerrys.
I get 99. Like, the wound is real fresh. Speaks is 26 years later.
That became personal with me.
Apparently.
This is why I'm fascinated to watch Michael on TV doing basketball games.
Well, and I guess that, yeah, because how's that going to go?
Because you sit in resentments. That can be entertaining. Not healthy, but entertaining.
And then seeing him with LT last night, and LT clearly asked him something, and Michael was like, nope, not doing that.
And then, because Bill Belichick, after the game, I get it if it's before the game, but after the game, Bill did his press conference in front of what looked like a junior prom display.
It definitely looked like turnabout dance like, going on there.
There were the Twitch, see the balloons.
I mean, seriously, the balloons, and I think looked like there were streamers. I believe Take My Breath Away from the first Top Gun was playing in the background.
Yep.
Like, what are we doing here?
It was a lot. Other notes from college football other than watching that thing. Ooh, Kalen DeBoer.
I feel bad for you.
Don't feel bad for me. Bad for him.
And people are already calling for the end of his run. You said it today. You said his time there is what?
Up.
They lost the first game of the year.
And they lost four games last year, including one to Vanderbilt, and then another one to a 5-6 Oklahoma team that wasn't very good. He's lost five times to unranked opponents in the year that he's been in Tuscaloosa.
The cool thing about the expanded playoff format is that big-time losses early on can just be what drives you, and they don't have to eliminate you from the broader conversation.
It's true.
And that's true for Texas and Arch Manning.
I think Texas is going to be fine.
It's true for Notre Dame, even after that loss to Miami.
And last year they proved it because, they lost to Northern Illinois. Our guy Andy was on the call. And then they ran off, I think, 14 straight to get to the national championship game. So, yeah, it can happen. I'm not worried. I'm very worried about Alabama because I don't like the quarterback. But that's a whole nother story.
High tide!
High tide indeed. The Arch Manning stuff this weekend was fascinating. Like, watching people be – because you know that there's a Bears fan that's like, you know, if this Caleb thing doesn't work out.
Oh, God.
Arch Manning. And then you watch Arch Manning. Here's what I don't understand. And I imagine he'll get it corrected. Peyton Manning and Eli Manning are your uncles, right? And we know from the Wickersham book that he talks to them often. I saw a kid that was throwing from every arm angle except for the one that his uncles threw from.
Yeah, the over the top.
Yeah, he was doing all sorts of like
three quarters.
Yeah,
and
like
halfway.
Phillip Rivers stuff. Like, what are you doing?
Trying to squeeze it into a spot.
He's got a strong arm. He's a really good athlete. He's a big boy. I think he's gonna be fine. I just think that everyone needs to dial back expectations on him.
It's
for
pretty,
this season.
I understand. I will say, for anybody who doesn't know, Matt Patricia is the defensive coordinator at Ohio State. because big time NFL failures now go to college and get handed crazy opportunities, like your guy Frank Reich at Stanford. You know,
yeah.
But Patricia with Ohio State talent, you know, on the road, that's a big ask for young Arch Manning. Like, I'm not ready to write the book on that kid.
Nor should you. He's very talented. And I think that to connect it back to T-Town, I'm convinced that had Arch Manning chose Alabama, Nick Saban would still be coaching there.
Hmm.
I'm convinced.
I don't know, man. Nick hated the way that the tide has turned.
Didn't he have Julian Saiyan? Who is now the quarterback at Ohio State?
Yes, but you got to read Wickersham's book, because that's where we found out that Nick Saban's nickname, Layla, cover your ears, is Daddy. And that's what all of the coaches call him when he showed up to the high school in New Orleans. Daddy's here. Daddy's coming. Daddy's going to get Arch Manning.
Daddy needs a sleep.
I'm so glad you played that, because I was going to say that next. All right, we'll stop with the college football stuff because we got pro football stuff to talk about. Mark Grody told us before the show that he needs two segments.
It's a big Bears news day today. Grody's going to cover it all.
Next here on The Score.